Welcome to a week of special summer listening, Arena's Olympiad, with me, Sean Rocks, where during the Summer Olympic Games, I'll be bringing you some of the best of Irish radio arts at this new time slot to facilitate the live broadcast of sport. Tonight, we're looking back at some of our best music interviews. Every year, towards the end of October, opera and art lovers descend on Wexford for the Opera Festival. Well, the programme for this year's Wexford Festival Opera has been announced. The theme of the festival this year is theatre within theatre. Each year, Wexford stages three main stage productions of rarely performed operas, as well as a number of short opera works. Now, the three main works this year are Le Mascare, or The Masked Ball, by Pietro Mascagni, The Critic, by Charles Villiers-Stanley, and an opera that I'm just going to call Viva la Mama by Donizetti. This, along with two pocket operas, including a new work by Colm Tobin and Alberto Caruso, will make up this year's programme. I'm here in Studio 8, joined by one of the soloists in the Charles Villiers-Stanford Opera, The Critic. He is Rory Dunn, bass baritone. He plays the role of the Governor of Tilbury Fort in The Critic. We'll talk to Rory in a moment, but first of all, we're going to hear him sing. Along with him is his accompanist, Aoife Moran, and they're going to perform Bella Siccome un Angelo from Don Pasquale by Donizetti.
Siccome un angelo in terra pellegrino, fresca siccome il giglio che s'apre sul mattino, occhio che parle ride, sguardo che cor conquide. Chioma che vince l'Ebano, sorriso incantator, sorriso incantator. Il ce l'ha fatta nascere per far beato un cor, per far beato un cor. Il ce l'ha fatta nascere per far beato.
Bella Siccome un Angelo from Don Pasquale by Donizetti, sung for us there by Rory Dunn, accompanied by Aoife Moran. That's it. That's a nice little gentle number for you from Donizetti. He really does the bel canto thing, Donizetti, even that little section where you sing by yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. It is, as said, as on the tin, beautiful singing. And much easier to sing than a lot of things, although you need a good technique behind it. Yeah, it always sounds easier than it is.
I was thinking that. Easy for you to say. It's easier to
once
sing.
You have it done, it's easy. Although, I mean, a full role can be a bit of a nightmare to get to get under your belt of it, but it's I mean, it's lovely to hear. I love listening to Bel Canto.
Yeah, and I know that there is a Donizetti opera as part of the main set of operas this year in Wexford. I said in the introduction, Viva la Mama.
Viva la Mama.
Because I wasn't prepared to give the full title. I thought,
which is fair enough. Le Convenienze ed Inconvenienze Teatrali, which is the theatrical inconveniences and conveniences. It's a comic title, as you might guess.
Very long title.
Absolutely. I think it's probably one of the longer titles in the operatic repertoire.
I know you're not involved in that one, but the theme this year is theatre within theatre, and even the title there, you know, the convenience and the inconveniences of theatre or whatever, or theatrical inconveniences. What is there a theatrical theme in this opera?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think with all of the operas, it is this theatre within a theatre, but specifically within this one, it takes place in an opera house, and there are a cast of characters which it kind of rotates around, mainly the prima donna, the prima soprano, and the seconda soprano, and then the mother of the seconda soprano, whose head is budding with absolutely everyone, and then a German tenor as well, who doesn't know any of his words or where he is or anything like that.
Would tenors be like that?
Oh, I have no comment, I'm sure.
I know baritones would never do that, would never behave like that. They're usually the heartbroken in the opera, aren't they?
So they're heartbroken because they don't get any of the lovely arias that tenors get. They get some, but and they never get the woman either in the story.
Yeah, well, that's generally the case, that the baritone has to sing that how much he loves the person that the tenor has just gone away with. So that's the Donizetti opera within this, and Le Mascagni, the mask ball from Mascagni. I'm guessing the same thing. We're in a world of masked characters, etc.
Absolutely,
et cetera.
Yeah. It's one of the older theatrical traditions of commedia dell'arte. It's kind of an early pantomime in which each of the characters is a stock character, like the doctor, il dottore, or Pantalon, the fool, that sort of thing, and a servant. They all have their certain roles, and there's an interesting prologue in which they kind of communicate to the audience what they're about to do. And this kind of started that trend, which then took off, and it's in a lot of operas after that.
Now, the one in which you have the biggest role to play, and quite an important role to play, is The Critic by Charles Villiers Stanford, with a book, or the libretto here, by Richard Brinsley Sheridan, he of The Rivals, the School for Scandal.
Yes, absolutely. It's I mean, this is by far the most, I think, convoluted and intensely confusing plot of all of them, because while all of them have theatre within theatre, this one specifically takes place in a theatre, and so we have four actors, and they are watching another play happening within it, which I am one of the players in. It's just, but I mean, Stanford in its own way is just brilliant.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the nature of Stanford, the Stanford music within it, because I suppose I associate him kind of with choral music. Choral music is important for him, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, so that vocal side of things is in there. And a kind of Irish romanticism of the period that he was writing.
I just did a recording with a retrospect opera and the Scottish Opera Orchestra of his, probably his most famous opera, Seamus O'Brien, last year. Myself and a cast of other Irish singers, actually, they tried to cast it entirely Irish so there could be a lot of all the dialogue, which is there is a kind of authentic and
Hiberno English. When you hear a title like Seamus O'Brien, I'm wondering, how Irish is
it?
Irish, is that opera?
Yeah, there's a lot of that, actually. I actually wrote an article for Gramophone about Stanford's Irish identity because, I mean, he even pulled the run of the performance of it when it was doing well because he felt it stirred up Irish nationalism at the time, and he was quite against home rule and all that sort of things.
And just to give us a sense of the style of the singing, I mean, we heard you with that Bel Canto earlier on. How would you describe this style of Stanford?
Stanford, I never really know where to put my finger on it. I've had this discussion several times over the last year, specifically about Seamus O'Brien as well, where some of the arias can feel almost like Die Fledermaus, but then other arias feel like Offenbach and some even more romantic settings of stuff. It's a hard one. I mean, I feel like his music doesn't really have a specific identity.
Yeah.
Or if it does, it's not very clearly
apparent.
Doesn't
jump out at you. Maybe that's that Irish English kind of.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, his life was full of duality, and I think his music is as well.
Is it anything, Tom Waits type sounds in the midst of it?
I wish.
I was interested to hear that one of your favourite singers is Tom Waits. And when I heard you singing Bel Canto, I thought, well, he never heard Tom Waits singing Bel Canto.
No, yeah, absolutely. I think, I like to listen to a lot of different styles of music. I mean, because I don't think I started singing opera till I was maybe 23 or 24. So before that, I would have done a lot of cover bands, that sort of stuff, like The Doors, that sort of stuff. And then got very much into Tom Waits, and I still am. I think he's my favorite songwriter and one of my favorite voices as well, even though it sounds like his voice has been hung up in a smokehouse and run over by a truck a couple of times. I think it's just so full of expression and poetry.
All right. Well, listen, you're going to sing a second aria for us right now. Interested in this one. How much of a Munster rugby fan are you?
I would cheer for Munster every time that Leinster aren't playing.
I've spoken like a true Leinster man. that one. But have you sung this in any kind of Munster setting?
I have sung the role of Escamillo in Munster in the Cork Opera House, just at the end of last year. So as part of the Caro O'Sullivan Associate Artists Program, we did a four-hander with some actors. Mm. And it pretty much it's La Tragédie de Carmen, so it's a reduced version of Carmen in which.
And were you singing in French or in English?
In French.
So you didn't have to sing stand up.
No, I didn't. Although I do know the words. If anyone's looking, if any Munster supporters are looking for anyone to sing it, I won't tell.
Tell your Leinster pals. Off you go over to Aoife once again. Thanks for speaking to us this evening, Rory. That's Rory Dunn, who is part of this year's Wexford Festival Opera, and here for Leinster, Ulster, Munster, and Connacht people, he's going to sing the Toreador song from Bizet's Carmen.
Votre toste, je peux vous le rendre, Seigneur, Seigneur, car avec le soldat, oui, le torero peut s'entendre, pour plaisir, il se le combat. Le cirque est plein, ces jours de fête, le cirque est plein, et à ton bas. Le spectateur, perdons la tête, le spectateur s'interpelle à grand braqueur. Apostrophe, triste tapage, je pousse jusqu'à si la fureur. Car c'est la fête du courage, c'est la fête de chant de cœur. Allons, un quart d'heure, allons, allons, toréador, en garde, toréador, toréador. Et songe bien, oui, songe en combattant, qu'un oeil noir tourne au cœur, dit que l'amour t'attend, toréador. L'amour, l'amour, tata. Tout un coup, on fait silence, on fait silence. Que se passe-t-il? Plus de cri céleste, plus de cri céleste. Le taureau s'élance en bondissant hors du torii. Il s'élance, il entreprappe en chevarule, entraînant un picador. Après votre taureau, hurle la foule. Le taureau va, elle vient, et frappe encore. sais quoi, c'est pas de rire. Plein d'humeur et le cœur, le cirque est plein de sang. On s'en sauve, on franchit le cri. C'est un cœur maintenant. Allons, un cœur d'or, allons, allons. Toréador, en garde. Toréador, toréador. Et songe bien, oui, songe en combattant. Qu'un œil noir tourne au cœur. Dès que l'amour t'attend, toréador. L'amour, l'amour t'attend, toréador, toréador.
The Toreador aria there from Carmen, performed by Rory Dunn with Aoife Moran on piano. You can see Rory as part of the Wexford Festival Opera in The Critic, which opens on October the 19th. And for information on that and indeed everything happening at Wexford during the autumn Wexford Festival Opera, go to the website wexfordopera.com. Winner of Vocalist of the Year at the Jazz FM Awards in 2020, Judy Jackson grew up in Virginia playing piano and singing in the church choir. Inspired by greats like Betty Carter, Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald and Nina Simone, her career started to take shape in her teens. In fact, she was just 16 when she opened for the legendary rhythm and blues and gospel singer Mavis Staples. Since that, Judy has performed with jazz legends like Guy Barker and, of course, and later with Jules Holland. Her live shows include her own interpretations of songs from jazz greats as well as some of her own music. She joins me this evening from London. Hi Judy, your album is actually the latest album, the most recent album is called My American Songbook as opposed to The American Songbook. How does a song make it into your American songbook?
Oh my gosh, what a great question. I just wanted to make it personal, you know? I wanted songs that resonated with me, songs that felt good. Because if it feels good, it's going to sound good. So that's why I called it My American Songbook.
And I guess that kind of answers the other question that I would often have when people take on, you know, these great classic songs, as you have done here, ones that won't surprise us, you know, pieces like Stormy Weather or My Baby Just Cares For Me. But other songs there that might surprise us a little bit more, like Here Comes the Sun or Baltimore from Randy Newman. Those songs, to get into those songs, you have to find something that makes the song yours. And I guess that's what you're talking about there. If it speaks to you, you can make it yours.
That's absolutely correct. Yes.
And let's talk particularly about Baltimore, because I found that choice really interesting. As it's composed by Randy Newman, but I guess for most of us, it will be Nina Simone, the opening
right.
track on her album, Baltimore. Was that where you first heard it?
That is where I first heard it. I went back and heard the Randy Newman version and absolutely love both. They're both so beautiful, so sharp, so unique, so soulful. And I wanted to do Baltimore because I am American, as you know. I'm from Roanoke, Virginia, as you just stated. And I've been to Baltimore. I've seen the struggle of that city. I know Billie Holiday's story with Baltimore as well. And I just remember growing up visiting that place and seeing some people who were really destitute and down and out. And I wanted to bring light to the situation and show that there is life after struggle, that yes, it is hard just to live, but you're not alone if you feel that way.
Would it be fair to say that the early part of your life, there were definitely struggles and challenges within that before you were adopted by your adoptive parents a little later on?
100%. We lived in shelters. I remember coming home from school one day and they told me that my mom had been put into the hospital and she wouldn't be coming out. And so that's why my friend's parents adopted me, because they saw that I was going through something. So I'm ever so lucky to have found a home. But I always have had a strong community. You know that saying that it takes a village to raise a child. I really felt like I was raised by villagers, a community of people who cared about me, and especially people at the music lab as well. That's where I opened for Mavis Staples. That's where I met Snarky Puppy. That's where I met Wynton Marsalis. There was a real sense of community and love and family. So I didn't go without, but there were a lot of struggles in the beginning, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, and your adoptive parents, I think, particularly your adoptive mother, was particularly responsible for getting you involved in singing in the church choir and all of that type of thing. But the Wynton Marsalis
yes.
gift that arrived yes. to your door is quite extraordinary. Wynton Marsalis, yes. of course, the great jazz trumpeter and classical musician as well. What did he send to you and why did he send it to you?
Right. So I met him backstage at the Jefferson Center after his concert. I was writing an article for my school newspaper and I accidentally left my journal backstage. I went to retrieve it and there he was. And he looked at me and he said, "You look smart. Do you think you're smart?" I said, "I don't know. I guess so. Yeah." He said, "You know what? I want to send you something. What's your address? Put me in contact with your mother and your father, because I think that you should study music in depth. You should study singing." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes, you should study Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, Blossom Dearie, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Aretha Franklin." These were all of the artists who were in this box of music that he sent me, along with his own works in his book, Moving to Higher Ground, which I read, which is so inspiring. Talk about a story. Talk about a journey. I took all of this information and I wrote notes on it and studied it day and night and would listen to Lady Sings the Blues and just become completely immersed with the music. And I fell in love with it. It became my life and it transferred over into my career. And I'm just ever so lucky to have met him on that day. It changed my life. That day changed my life for the better.
Was Nina Simone's Baltimore in the box as well, the album? Was it, or do you remember?
It was not.
It was not. So you got that
no,
later.
I discovered that later on my own, yeah.
Well, the discovery you made led to it being on your current album, My American Songbook. Let's just listen to what you do with that Randy Newman stroke Nina Simone song, because I kind of have to think of it as belonging to both of them in some ways. And now you have part ownership, as we will hear. Oh, Baltimore, Ain't It Hard Just to Live. Lyrics there from Randy Newman and the song Baltimore. And sung for us there by Judy Jackson from her album My American Songbook. Those lyrics right across that opening section that we just listened to, Judy, the lyrics are as important as the music itself. How do the lyrics help you into what you do with getting that soulful nature into the piece?
The lyrics are an imperative part of telling the story. They paint the picture. So you have to articulate them in a very specific way. Beat up little seagull on a marble stair, trying to find the ocean, looking everywhere. Hard times in the city, in a hard town by the sea. Ain't nowhere to run to, there ain't nothing here for free. Right?
Yeah.
So when I sing those songs, I see the picture in my head when I say those lyrics, and I hope that the audience then can see that as well. As I am saying those words, they can visualize the hooker on the corner waiting for the train. They can see and smell the drunk lying on the sidewalk sleeping in the rain. The people hiding their faces and hiding their eyes because the city's dying and they don't know why. Oh, Baltimore.
Yeah. But it's extraordinary that there you are sitting, you know, wherever you are in London this evening, and those lyrics are very much at the front of your mind. You can recite them as if it is a piece of poetry. But I was also really taken by the arrangement, the musical arrangement in underneath you there. You obviously have an extraordinary set of musicians playing with you.
Yes, my dear friend Jamie Safir on piano, Michele Montoli on bass, and William Cleesby on the drums.
You've spoken about the early part of your life that was quite a nomadic. You talked about your mother being in the shelter and things like that, that I think you were living in the same places at the same time. That nomadic aspect of your early childhood, how do you think it has fed into your career and the way you perform right now today?
I think it's made me very flexible. I can adapt. I'm a chameleon. I can find myself in any situation and figure out how to survive and play and move and exist in that room, in that place, with different kinds of people from different walks of life. I can exist in any situation happily and healthily, strong and freely because of how I grew up.
And when it came to writing your own work, because I'm just looking down, with you, in fact, I think, is that the only song on the album that is your own? How different is it for you when you also write the song and perform it from performing the works of others?
It's a great question. It's still a similar approach. You're still a storyteller. But this time it's even more personal because they are your stories. Sometimes you're telling other people's stories that still connect with you and resonate with you. Sometimes you're telling your own story. And so that's what I would say would be the difference, is what kind of story are you telling and whose perspective is it from?
And I want to finish up with the song that opens the album, in fact, because it's so hopeful and it has, you know, given the difficult start that you had to where you have brought yourself today, the song Here Comes the Sun seems to, it shows to me such a positive side of you. Why did you want to open the album with that particular song?
I absolutely love singing Here Comes the Sun. I've been doing it for years. We did it on tour with my first Nina Simone tour, Little Girl Blue. And my band just sounds absolutely incredible on that. I love the improvisational bit that we do at the end. I thought it would be a great opener because it's light. It's beautiful, it's musical, it's jazzy but soulful and a bit poppy as well. So I thought it was just a perfect blend of everything to open the album with, and that's why I went with that one. Ironically, yes, it is George Harrison, so it's not really an American songbook song, but I still snuck it in there and called it My American Songbook. That's why I went with that one.
Yeah, but did you hear the song in America?
I did.
Therefore, it qualifies for your American Songbook.
Yes.
I'm with you on that. Judy,
okay,
love.
Okay, awesome.
Thanks for speaking with us. And we'll finish up by listening to Judy Jackson and that opening track on her album, My American Songbook. This is her version of Here Comes the Sun.
Here comes the sun. Little darling, here comes the sun, and I say it's all right. It's all right. the sun. Da da do da do do. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. It's all right, little darling, little darling. It's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it seems like years since you've been here. Here comes the sun, da 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 da. Here comes the sun, and I say it's all right.
Chillissimo 2024 brings us an intriguing title for this year's festival. It's called Songs of Travel and promises a journey to nourish hearts and minds, and that engages with current topics of migration and climate change. But of course, it's all about bringing the best of cello music to us. And I'm here in Studio 8 of the RTE Radio Centre with Music for Galway Artistic Director, pianist Fionnuala Collins, and the cellist Jakub Karanyi, who will both be taking part in Chillissimo. We're going to start with Jakub, however, since it is a festival all about the cello, we should listen to just the cello. Prelude from Suite No. 1 in G Major of Johann Sebastian Bach, played for us this evening by Jakub Karanyi. If you're going to show off the cello, Jakub, it's a good place to start those Bach suites, isn't it? And particularly that opening movement, that prelude from the very first suite, it kind of lays out what he's going to do across the suites.
It is an iconic piece, I think.
I guess for every cellist, the moment that you first have to play that is a big moment in your cello life. When and how did that happen for you?
I think I guess it's a different story for every cellist. For me, I sort of grew up with it. I played it before I thought about if I played or didn't play. I think the first time I played it, I was six or something like that.
Young?
It's this particular prelude. So it's been with me for longer than I can remember, almost.
I would guess that the performance of it has changed somewhat over the years.
Yeah, I would assume as much, yeah.
And I would guess that you didn't have a cello like the one that you play at
smaller.
The moment. Yeah. What cello are you playing? I don't know if that's the one that you have with us for this performance this afternoon. Tell us about the cello itself.
That's a cello that's been with me for a long time. It's called the maker's Graziani. It's built in 1756 in the Genoa area of Italy, now Italy.
And a particularly, obviously, somebody who had a great ear for melody and mellowness, which is what the cello gives us. Finine, ever moments when you sit down to the piano and think, why didn't I choose something as beautiful as the melodies that can be gotten on a cello and that only involves generally one line of notes? Okay, occasionally they have the odd chord and etc., but for the most part it's a single line melody.
Yeah, there are moments when I would like to play another instrument. I did play the violin as a child for many years, and it does give me a feeling for drawing a bow across a string. But I also know how difficult it is to play a stringed instrument because of the intonation. You've got to find the notes on the fingerboard every time. They're not sitting there like on the piano. So I respect string instrument players enormously. And I just love the cello.
And I guess being artistic director of music for Galway and being involved so heavily then in the programming for Cellissimo, you get to, I presume, indulge your love of the instrument.
I do, exactly. And that was really why we came up with the idea of the festival, was to celebrate the versatility of this instrument. I think it's one of the most versatile instruments.
And obviously you have world-famous cellists and wonderfully talented cellists like Jakob as part of the programme. Jakob, you're also involved in a world premiere of Havar Tafik's Voyage and Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time. That Messiaen piece is quite extraordinary. Even in his composition, it was only the instruments that he had at his disposal that he could use.
Yeah, you could. He made good use of
them. And what are those instruments? Just because a quartet, people may think, oh, cello is probably a string quartet. It's not.
No.
What have we got?
So you got the piano, violin, the clarinet, and the cello.
Because these happen to be the instruments and the people that could play in the particular place. It was a concentration camp that he was in.
That's what I
at the time. How bleak a piece is the quartet of for the end of time, or is there hope within it?
I think there is. It's all about hope. I mean, he was a very religious person, and it's in many ways very biblical, the piece, and it's all about salvation and light, and it's a grandiose piece.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal work for sure. Hope is certainly what we need in terms of climate change and migration and those problems that are around us at the moment, Finney. And I was, to be frank, I was kind of surprised when I thought, oh, so you want us to go to a music concerts with beautiful music in it, and then we're going to have to think about climate change and think about problems around migration at the same time. It's a brave mix to put those two things together. Why was it so important to you and to?
Well, actually, it was Jakob who inspired us in the beginning to think this way about climate change, because when we invited Jakob to Cellissimo in 2020, which of course never happened because of the pandemic, he said that he would only come if he could travel across land and sea, because he doesn't fly for good environmental reasons. And that really set us thinking, because back in 2018 there wasn't so much of a thing, and set us thinking. And we to make Cellissimo 2024 happen, we teamed up with Jakob's festival in Sweden and with other festivals in Norway and the Netherlands, and a game development company in Austria, to form a Creative Europe partnership to allow us to create new music, to increase empathy, to build empathy and awareness around topics that are everywhere now. And we didn't even know when we planned this festival that immigration and migration would be front page of the papers. You know, it's such a topic that we can't get away from it. And we do ask our audience to think about these issues as part of the festival. But there are many other concerts which are simply, as somebody said the other day, comfort blankets, where you get your Brahms and your Shostakovich and your Debussy. And the piece you just referenced by Havar Tafik is another piece, Voyage, which is again a reference to these issues.
So Sweden to Ireland by boat is probably quite an enjoyable trip. You probably get to travel at a nice pace and to see lots of beautiful things along the way, if all sea based.
Well,
you didn't come from Sweden today.
I did come from Sweden, but the thing is that traveling by boat is actually not so good. So I go by train. I went by train all the way to Holyhead, and then there's a short boat trip from Holyhead to Dublin.
All right, so you trained for the most part across Europe. And wherever.
Train is many, many times better than boat.
You don't get seasick on a train.
Well, environmentally speaking.
And environmentally speaking, then.
Well, yeah, that's my point. Yeah,
I didn't know that. Well, there's something new. There you go. That's why these concerts are worthwhile. You're going to play a second piece for us now, Nadia Boulanger, one of the great teachers as well as composers.
Indeed, she had a very long career in France, and a very highly regarded composer. She wrote these beautiful pieces for cello, which we're going to play the first.
All right, well, let's listen to the first of those three pieces for cello and piano by Nadia Boulanger, Jakub Koranyi on cello and Finian Collins on piano. Yes, the beautiful melodic quality of the cello there, very much to the fore in that first of the three pieces for cello and piano of Nadia Boulanger. The cellist performing for us there was Jakub Koranyi and pianist Finian Collins. Picking up the trumpet at the age of 7 in a school band, Norwegian trumpeter Tina Ting Helseth has championed the instrument and its repertoire amongst audiences on all 6 continents, meriting the critical praise for her soulful, lyrical and sound and her collaborative approach to music making. Tina's ever-expanding repertoire ranges from the classical period through contemporary works and indeed new commissions. She has been the recipient of numerous awards, including the first ever classical artist to win Newcomer of the Year at the Norwegian Grammy Awards. And I'm delighted that Tina is in our Limerick studios this evening to play for us and to talk to us as well. And let's get the Norway bit up and front and out there straight of all, because I think you have a piece. You have a piece of Edvard Grieg ready for me, Tina. Have you to play?
Sure, well, I will just make myself ready, and you'll hear. It's a cow call, actually. Edvard Grieg, you know, the most famous Norwegian composer, that he collected different tunes around, and this is then a traditional cow call.
Okay.
Yeah, that he collected. Thank you.
absolutely beautiful, the music of Edvard Grieg there, Cowkeeper's Tune and Country Dance. I'm guessing that is the Cowkeeper's Tune that we just heard from Grieg's Two Norwegian Airs, played live in our Limerick studios this evening by Tina Ting-Helseth. It really struck me listening to that. It's one of the qualities, I think, Tina, about the trumpet that is forgotten all too often. That I almost saw a lonely cowherder up on a hillside singing this
plaintive sound. Playing for the cows, yeah.
But it's such a plaintive sound. You know, we're inclined to think, oh, the trumpet fireworks and fanfares and all of that style to it. But that melodic side, I presume, was one of the things that really attracted you to the instrument.
Absolutely. And the trumpet can do so much different stuff. And, you know, maybe a lot of people think of it sometimes as like this, you know, the fanfare, loud and fast and stuff like that. And a lot of people think of it in like jazz and stuff like that. But it has this, what's always been kind of my favorite thing to do, and it still is, it's just to play a beautiful tune. It's like I could do that, like, if I got to do that for the rest of my life, then I would, you know. I just think there is something so rewarding also for me as a musician to just kind of figure out how to play a simple melody in the most honest and personal way and just sharing that with the audience.
Yeah, because and that single line that obviously you have in a wind instrument like that, it means that it is very much like the singing voice. It has that quality to it. In fact, your own mother played the trumpet. You'll be telling me next that she played you lullabies at night on the trumpet to set you off to sleep.
Well, my mother, she played the trumpet. So she's not a professional musician, but you know, as our hobby, I mean, we have such a strong wind and brass band tradition in Norway, so that's why I started. My mom and dad played as a hobby, and when I grew up, I thought everyone played an instrument or a wind instrument or percussion, or so it was the most natural thing for me to do. I mean, I always wanted to play the trumpet, and I guess I heard it from before I was born, even.
Yeah.
So, it always was something very close to my heart, but of course, I didn't want to hear, you know, what my mother said. I wanted my own teacher, not my mom. That was too close.
That was, too close for comfort. But you mentioned there the tradition of the wind band in Norway.
Particularly
when I hear that more melodic style of playing, it makes me think very much of, you know, the English brass band tradition.
Absolutely.
In and around the collieries, particularly in the north of England. Were wind bands associated with a particular area of Norway or a particular jobs set within Norway, or how did they work as community work bands?
Well, I mean, it's a bit. So we also have the kind of brass band tradition, especially on the West Coast, that is, you know, like the English. That's where it came from, England. And then they play, you know, the cornets and horns, and they don't have the woodwind and stuff that we have in the wind bands. But the wind band tradition actually comes from the military bands in Norway, that has this very strong tradition, and they started to kind of, you know, they inspired people then to do this as their hobby, to have their own band in every city. I mean, there is a lot of bands playing still. So, but then it's a hobby that, you know, kids play, grown-ups play. It's a very, I don't know, for me, it was one of the best ways of having a good, nice hobby, you know?
And I think that community aspect of a wind band like that, where, you know, people of all levels and abilities can play in a band like that.
Because
you have a first cornet and you have a second cornet and a third cornet. So, you know, you don't have to be an expert to play
No, not at all. And, and a lot of the social and like doing something together. And I think that's, sometimes I kind of also envy the people that just play because they want to and they like it, and then they, you know, they have their other job. I do like it, but it's also my job. So sometimes I'm so fascinated and so inspired by seeing the people that just play because they want to.
What is the balance like with the chamber orchestra, essentially a string orchestra? How difficult a balance is that to strike?
Well, actually, for this program, they are only strings and me. And so we do one piece that is original, we call it original, for trumpet players is actually a horn concerto, but that's a long time ago. So now we've kind of, it's ours now by this Czech composer. It's like like this in the middle of Baroque and classical,
yes,
kind of. So Neruda is his name. So we do this concerto that is only with strings.
Yeah.
Originally,
I have a little bit of the Neruda playing underneath.
I hear it now in the background
because there's a whole 22 bars, I think it is, before the trumpet before the trumpet gets in.
So yeah, getting ready. This is the third moment I hear.
Yeah, it's the third moment. So I do want to hear just when the trumpet comes in, which I think is about. Now, well, I hope it's about
It's very
now.
Soon now. Yeah. It's only a couple of bars left.
Here we go.
Here we go.
The Neruda trumpet concerto, and it struck me. You said that that was a horn concerto originally, but now it's quite. You're very clear. It's a trumpet concerto,
yes,
at this point in time. Is there a paucity? Is there a scarceness of repertoire for the trumpet, Tina?
Well, I mean, we do have some beautiful repertoire, but but it is limited compared to like violinists or pianists or some stuff like that. So I mean, me personally, I really like the process of playing music that is for other instruments or song or the voice, or I want to play it just because it's nice music and then I want to do it too. So that's a bit, you know, with the Greek songs that we do and also with the Piazzolla stuff we do, it's not original for the trumpet. But
of course, but you arrange for it. Have you ever played a Joni? I know you're a huge Joni Mitchell fan. Have you ever played a Joni Mitchell song on the trumpet?
I have actually, yeah. Both been playing and singing a bit that I also do jazz and pop and those kind of things. I have played both sides now, with strings actually on a flugelhorn. That's quite nice with the soft sound. And
I was going to ask you about that. Do you move across? I mean, because it struck me with the Neruda that perhaps that might have been on a higher. It might have been on the E flat instrument sometimes.
Are you a trumpet player?
I have a little bit of knowledge. A little bit of knowledge, but a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing.
It sounds like a pro to me. No, that is the E flat trumpet. We do like our and it's in E flat, so it's kind of like a higher pitch. But then, my favorite instrument is my C trumpet,
which is a bit lower.
A little bit lower. And then you have like a flugelhorn that has more like a softer, bigger sound. So we have different instruments that we play for different repertoire.
Tina Thing Helseth, lovely to speak with you this evening, Tina. And I will mention to people as well that you have a wonderful album with your ensemble, which is called She Composes like a man.
Yeah.
Which is all full of female composers and arrangements for trumpet. Absolutely gorgeous. I was listening to some of them today, and people should check that out.